Senka Birans is an assistant professor in urban logistics at Chalmers University of Technology and the manager of the Urban Freight Platform based in Gothenburg, Sweden. His primary research interest is to advance the understanding of the interaction between logistics, transport, and land use, and to develop solutions to improve the sustainability of urban logistics operations. His expertise is in impact assessment of logistics measures, urban freight planning, and intermodal transport. Jean-Paul Rodrigue received a PhD in transport geography from the University of Montreal and has been a professor at Hofstra University since 1999. Dr. Rodrigue's research interests mainly cover the fields of transportation and economics as they relate to logistics and global freight distribution. Specific topics over which he has published extensively cover maritime transport systems and logistics, global supply chains, gateways, and transport corridors. Sengun Kang is an advanced PhD student in urban planning at the University of Southern California. His field specialization is urban freight systems. He is interested in documenting sub-metropolitan spatial characteristics of warehousing and distribution centers and testing how changing spatial patterns may affect urban freight activities over time. Quan Yan is a PhD candidate in urban planning and development at Price School of Public Policy at University of Southern California. His research interests include urban transportation and land use, urban freight planning, and parking policy. He got his bachelor's degree in urban planning from Peking University in 2011 and master's degree in urban and regional planning from UCLA in 2013. He is now working with Professor Genevieve Giuliano on Metro Freight Project in USC Metrans Center. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentation you think of a question, you can type it in to the chat area. Please make sure you send your questions to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. Presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I will start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. If time allows, we will open up the phone lines for questions as well. If we run out of time and are unable to address all questions, we will attempt to get written responses from the presenters to the unanswered questions. The PowerPoint presentations used during the seminar are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and a transcript. I will notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you are attending with a group of people, you must type your first and last name into the chat box. I've included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after the seminar. For those of you who are not AICP members but would like to receive PDH credits for this webinar, please note that FHWA does not formally offer PDHs. However, it may be possible to receive PDHs for your participation in Talking Freight if you are able to self-certify. To possibly receive PDHs, please download the agenda from the file download box and submit this agenda to your respective licensing agency. Finally, I encourage everyone to please also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit this form to me after you have filled it out. I'm now going to turn it over to Tom O'Brien of Metrans Transportation Center for some opening remarks. Tom?
Thank you, Nicole. My name is Tom O'Brien. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for International Trade and Transportation at California State University, Long Beach, and the Associate Director of the Metrans Transportation Center. And I just wanted to take 2 minutes here to provide some context for the presentations you're about to hear. These were presentations that were featured at Metrans's 6th International Urban Freight Conference, which was held last month in Long Beach, California. Metrans is the home to four research centers, the Metrans University Transportation Center, which is a USDOT UTC, and we're part of a National Center for Sustainable Transportation housed at UC Davis. The focus of our work is on sustainable freight movement. Metro Freight, which is the Center of Excellence in Urban grant funded by the Volvo Research and Education Foundation in Sweden and the FHWA Southwest Transportation Workforce Center. The IMUF conference, International Urban Freight Conference, is the home to research for these research centers and for an international audience of researchers, practitioners, and public sector agency representatives to explore various aspects of urban freight. The presentation from the IMUF conference, of which these three are included, are available on the MetTrans website at mettrans.org. All of the background on the conference is can be found there, and you'll find presentations that relate to areas of interest, including local and last mile pickup and delivery, trade nodes and hubs, including ports, airports, and distribution, different freight modes, urban modeling and planning, new technology, changing consumption, production and spatial organization, and best practices. And if there's any need for additional information, you'll be able to contact us through that website. At this point, though, I would like to turn it over for this discussion of warehousing and its impacts to Dr. Franke Behrens from Chalmers University. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, for the introduction. Yes, good evening, everybody. My name is Silke Behrens, Gothenburg, Sweden, so it's 7 p.m. right now here. But I'm happy to be part of this seminar, so thank you for inviting us. This work is a joint work together with Jean-Paul Rosic, and in this work, we're going to take a closer look at some of the differences between freight distribution in central areas with high density and more suburban areas with lower density. We're going to discuss if we are actually observing an emerging dualism in urban freight distribution between these areas. Okay. The presentation is first provide some background to the research. We then define the fundamental differences between suburban logistics and city logistics. Followed by that, we're going to focus more on suburban logistics and identify some trends which we think increase the relevance of this type of logistics operations in urban areas. We will then further discuss whether we see an emergent dualism between these two areas. And finally, we're going to conclude whether we see this as an emergent field of research. So, the aspects of production and consumption, and accessibility is very essential for the economic development of cities and urban areas. On the other hand, it's obvious that cities do not want to have the impacts of freight traffic and do not want to have the congestion, air pollution, noise, and so on, and this is seen as a barrier to the sustainable development of cities. So you see here a dilemma between economic development and sustainable development, and what we have seen in the recent years that there's a lot of growing city logistics research and policies in cities around the world trying to work with this dilemma. But what we also see is that the focus when it comes to urban logistics research is mainly on last mile deliveries, and so it's also the focus of policy. So we tend to focus on the last mile delivery from the distribution center into the central area. Freight operations in the suburban areas, on the other hand, are widely underrepresented. So we do not see so much policies and not so much research in this field of urban logistics. So what we're trying to do with this presentation or with this work, we want to put logistics into the whole metropolitan area. So going beyond this very focus on last mile deliveries and also include other urban logistics operations in the suburban areas, for example, large terminal facilities for freight terminals or airports. So from this, we've formulated some questions, and the main question is actually if there is a dualism emerging in city logistics. So are there underlying different forms of urban distribution taking place in the high-density urban areas, better areas, and urban distribution problems in suburban areas? From this, we can derive the question if there is a dualism, what actually the current focus of policies on central area cities and city center logistics in private growth of this dualism, will this have an impact on the dualism emerging? And finally, following from that, will carriers then develop different urbanization channels, whether you stick them on transit modes, or they have tailor-made operations for urban areas on the one hand and city logistics on the other hand, instead of the current one size fits all approach.
Okay, hi, this is Jean-Paul Rodrigue speaking from another time zone, so I should say good afternoon. Before moving on with this topic, it might be a good idea to start with a little bit of the perspective about what all this city logistics and urban freight flows entails. And that little chart here, it pretty much resumes the situation and underlines the, I would say, the very interesting and amazing variety of urban freight flows that are taking place. And if you want more information, I provide at the bottom of the slide an hyperlink to some further explanation available online. But a point I would like to make here is more often city logistics per se tend to focus on what we call urban deliveries, which are that little green line that you see over there, which is mostly from distribution centers to final consumers and offer sometimes also consumer-related shopping trips. But what, of course, we have noticed, it's quite self-evident, there's actually an whole array of producer-related flows which are linked with transport terminals, manufacturing clusters, freight distribution clusters, which are taking place in suburban area. And as this is taking place, we tend to observe an emerging, I would say, dichotomy between all these different forms of city logistics. And as Sanke underlined before, we tend to focus on this last mile and sometimes the last feet of city logistics, while we tend to ignore, I would say, some kind of the big picture taking place in suburban area. And that's obviously what we'd like to a little bit focus more here in this presentation. So to move on further with this rationale or this perspective about suburban logistics, we tend to, again, this is some kind of speculation. There's some empirical evidence behind it, but it needs to be further underlined. The point is that when we deal with city logistics, we start to observe very interesting, differences in the cost structure and the challenge based upon the respective densities in which this urban freight distribution is taking place. And paradoxically, city logistics, or let's say central area logistics, tend to be the most expensive, the most challenging, because of a series of factors which are identified on this slide, such as obviously higher density. You have obviously limited space available in stores for inventory, so you have a more frequent deliveries, parking difficulties. Those are pretty well known in address. And as opposed to this, the system of freight distribution, which is taking place in suburban area, is, I would say, much more effective because of the difference in densities which is occurring in suburban areas. So that's something which is worth underlining, and again, it underlines a little bit of the paradox behind this. Is the suburban freight system is, in a sense, an environment which is excessively suitable, or it's much more suitable for urban freight distribution than what takes place in central area. And then that's what we are questioning is, are we observing an emerging dualism? Are we going to observe two different separate urban freight distribution paradigm emerging? One we call, of course, city logistics per se, which seems to be the focus of the attention, because this is where the low-hanging fruits are. This is where a lot of the benefit needs to be realized in terms of improving the efficiency. However, you have a whole, again, emerging suburban logistics system where the growing share of the global population tend to be living in suburban area, which seems to be, I would say, involving its own paradigm, its own operations. And that seems to be, I would say, a questioning or a wondering we are asking ourselves, is this going to create separate urban freight distribution systems because of that?
Okay, we're going on to continue with discussing current trends, which increase the relevance of freight distribution in suburban areas. So we now continue focusing on suburban logistics. And the first trend which we see have an impact on suburban logistics is the ongoing suburbanization and its impact on the consumption pattern. So when we look at the commercial perspectives and the urban social structure, we usually see the economy of rural areas and central areas. So we have a core central area and its related suburbs, and the production pattern behind that are very simple, that the retail activities are taking place in the center and the suburbs represent in the residential area. So we have clear interaction between the center and the suburbs. This economy of city and suburbs has actually been replaced by a highly dispersed and differentiated polycentric urban region. So these regions are no longer dominated by a core city, but they are increasingly characterized by decentralization and urban sprawl. So as a result, we see much more dispersed and differentiated interaction between the core city and its suburbs. Furthermore, resulting from this, we see the suburban consumption patterns everywhere, both in North America, also in Europe. So we have more and more these out of town shopping malls. We have large format stores which have emerged in suburban areas. And the functionality of logistics and accessibility was one of the driving forces, or one dominating driving force, because they were actually established at accessible locations where land was cheap to buy and good accessibility to the urban road network. So we see now that these suburban centers have emerged as new nodes of freight distribution. Another feature of suburban consumption patterns is the increase of e-commerce. This, of course, leads to a high amount of home deliveries of parcels and so on. And we see especially valid in suburban areas where we have a special characteristics both in socioeconomic terms. We have larger average incomes, we have larger households, but also in the special composition of the area. So we see these areas are prone to higher levels of e-commerce than central areas. So the point we want to make here is that we see that suburban consumption patterns are distinctly different from those in central areas. Another trend is so for logistics sprawl, that is the popularization of logistics activities. As in recent years, trade volumes have been growing and we have higher consumption levels. This, of course, led to the fact that logistics facilities need to be more space and more accessible locations. And they have been moved out of the city centers where they originally located to more accessible places in suburban areas where land use was. Land was cheap to buy, and you have better accessibility to the operational roads network. So with this situation, we can observe two effects. The first is, of course, we have increased distances in distribution. We have high distances from the distribution center into the city centers where the large retail activities are taking place, leading to more traffic. We have more congestion, more air pollution, more safety risks, and so on, and in general, in essence, higher tech amenities in the urban area. On the other hand, moving these out of the city center, we have the reduction of terminal haulage taking place in central areas, that is, the large trucks serving these warehouses, and this can be maybe seen as a positive effect. So the resulting impact is not really clear if it's good or bad for cities, but we see also some other impacts, and that is that logistics activities take more and more space in suburban areas, and we also see many new forms of interactions between suburbs and city logistics. So one example is that instead of having these small delivery vans making deliveries, we see process the logistics operators adapt the vehicles. They maybe switch again using larger vehicles going into the city center, but then having closer to the city center urban distribution centers where they again reload to more suitable vehicles, for example, cargo bikes or small electro distribution vans. So they become up with more new forms of urban distribution operations.
Okay, I hope my voice is a little bit clearer. It looks like there's some audio problems. We'll find out. Another issue, obviously, which is linked with all this suburban logistics paradigm, is the fact, obviously, with trends such as outsourcing, offshoring, globalization, things which are bad, I'd say trends that are well known. You see, of course, across the world, especially in larger urban areas such as Los Angeles, of course, New York, among others, Chicago, the emergence of a large gateway function, which involves complex interactions between intermodal terminals and clusters of freight distribution centers. And this brings into the equation, I would say, an additional dimension to suburban logistics, which is what we can call terminal haulage, which starts to have a very significant impact on all these distribution aspects and congestion. And it's often the problem is that most of the port terminals tend to be located in relative proximity to central areas, of course, such as in New York and Los Angeles, for instance. And all of this creates additional traffic, additional complexities and conflicts, and possibly the potential for additional regulation that could impact and all that dimension of suburban logistics. So that's an aspect that needs to be put in mind or keep the attention of policymakers. So which brings us to the question. Now, we're observing a convergence or a divergence in city logistics, and the point we are putting forward here is, in our opinion, for large metropolitan areas, it seems to be a divergence taking place. And the question is, to what extent, what this divergence will create, and the what we seem to underline is it might create two separate urban freight distribution channels, one adapted to central areas where you even have the specific vehicles, smaller vehicles, you know, all these sustainability strategies with electric vehicles, parking, deliveries outside regular hours, all these, let's say, city logistics strategies which are pretty well known, and all those regulations that are linked to try to, I would say, mitigate these impacts. But while this happens, it essentially forces urban freight distributors to implement a dual strategy. I will have a central city strategy, and then I'm going to keep in suburban area my regular freight distribution strategy. So that's, in a sense, what we are wondering. And that's the other thing we seem to be observing, and that seems to be, might be a little bit upsetting to some of you, is all those, smart growth strategies, complete strategies, appear to be in contradiction or undermining city logistics strategies, in the sense that in a suburban area, or an area where those, I would say, those strategies of establishing smart growth strategies are going.
To undermine
the efficiency of urban freight distribution because of the design. The freight appears not to be part of this design. So that's one something that needs to be further discussed and addressed, to what extent smart growth strategies, most of them taking place in suburban area, might be in contradiction to freight distribution strategies. Another one, last and not least, is, of course, all this e-commerce issue can also be problematic in the sense that it creates the benefits of consolidation in central areas because of the density factor, so the consolidation factors are positive in central areas, while the delivery factors of e-commerce are cheaper in suburban areas. So that's something, again, which is interesting, which brings us to the last, to some case, because I don't see stuff in my screen anymore.
Okay. Yes. What can we conclude then from this work? So we started with the question, should suburban logistics be the field of policy and also of research? And I think we can conclude yes. We see this divergence in urban freight distribution. So suburban logistics, in a way, we see here a paradox. So we said in the beginning that most of the research takes place in city center areas, and we can actually conclude from the discussion that we just had right now that maybe suburban logistics is much more relevant than city logistics. So it should maybe become more the norm, while city logistics is the exception. On the other hand, we see that suburban areas represent a very good
about
and all the related problems that we see in higher densities like parking, congestion, and so on are less relevant here. So our conclusion is yes, we see a developing dualism here. What are then possible implications? So what we already mentioned that might be the fact that carriers will follow two strategies to distribution. One is a central strategy for high-density central areas and then the suburban strategy. The question remains then, whether this system will lead to higher costs. Another question which we need to look further into is what are actually the driver of the developing divergence? We found two factors which may be the driver. One is density, of course. If we have higher density, we see it more relevant in developing two different strategies. But then the question remains, what is the density threshold? Is it only relevant for the very high density areas like Manhattan or other cities, or do we see this also in smaller towns and cities? It could also be regulation. So we see as a consequence of the problems in urban logistics that cities more and more invent strategies like access restrictions, regulating access to city centers, banning them from different times of day and so on. So will this burden for operators, for carriers, inside this dualism which we may observe? And then the question remains, what level of burden will lead to this divergence? These are questions that we need to look further into in the future. Okay, thank you very much. We're happy to answer questions, and you can direct the questions either to Jean-Paul or to me directly, or if you don't want to specify who should answer at this time, a single person answering the question. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sanki. Excuse me, Sanka. We are now going to move on to Sangoon of the University of Southern California. And while I'm bringing up his presentation, I apologize for the audio issues we've been having. Hopefully everybody can hear now either via the phone or over the computer. We did reconnect the line. Okay, Sangoon, if you would like to go ahead and begin your presentation.
Nicole. Hi, my name is Sanjin Chang, PhD student at the University of Southern California. This presentation is about changes in warehouse location and their impact on metropolitan areas. There is growing concern that metropolitan activities, the warehousing activities are moving to the edges of our metro areas, further from their market, and these location changes are just generating more traffic and related impacts. However, the evidence on warehousing location changes is limited. In this presentation, I will discuss the reasons for decentralization and how we should measure location changes. I will present some preliminary results for four metropolitan areas in California. This presentation is organized around three questions. First, we need to consider the impact of warehousing location. And also, in order to determine whether warehousing activities are decentralizing, we need consistent measures. Then we need to apply these measures across different metro areas to see if the trends are consistent. So question number one. There is anecdotal evidence that warehouses are moving to the urban periphery. It implies more truck activity. Again, more truck activity suggests more potential negative externalities, such as congestion, fuel consumption, greenhouse gases, noise, environmental justice issues. Then why would they move? The supply chain is restructuring. The restructuring goals are to move things in large volume and high speed at the right time. They need large volume operations because they have to fulfill national and global movement. It is required to respond immediately to diversify the customer pace. The product life is getting shorter and shorter. Also, just-in-time production requires reliable delivery of resources and products. New sectors require different types of warehouses. such that it is big and technology intensive. It became more about movement of goods rather than storing them. So the result is system-wide integration, but geographical separation. And all this began from 1970s and has been well understood. What is not well understood is metropolitan level supply chain restructuring. A current understanding so far is that in order for the logistics firm to achieve this goal, they need larger facilities and larger land parcels and lower per unit land cost. They constantly seek lower overall cost. Maybe automation lowers the cost, but only with larger volume. As transport costs decline, distance to market becomes less valuable relative to other costs. Travel distance became less relatively flexible thanks to information, communication, and transportation technology advancements. Having access to local markets became less important than having access to global supply chain. All these location effects trade-offs, we would suggest warehousing decentralization. Let's think about how to measure this, what are the issues in measurement. Let's begin from a simple example. Here's a city in one CBD, which is the major marketplace. We have a high density level core and a lower density suburban area, a simple system. If there were important exports, they came from some factory and were transported to the market to be sold over time, over there. What's been produced in here typically went in the opposite direction. The world changes for all regions. We may have a very different kind of system. The metro area has changed, and the supply chain has changed as well. The metro areas are far more dependent on import and export flows because metro areas don't produce much of what they consume these days. All metro areas are often producers of products for which there is an international market. We can imagine all kinds of flows now and are going in and out in addition to move around within them. Now let's consider new activities. New warehouses are built in different places where land is cheaper and more available. Land is regulation is less stringent or have greater access to transportation infrastructure. If you consider their market as a CBD, their distance from market has increased, which in turn implies more truck activity. However, we don't really know whether, in fact, distance from market has decreased. The trade-off changes could take many forms. The distance from the market might increase, but at the same time, due to the land availability, regulation, and all other factors, warehouses end up locating in similar places. They ended up concentrating in a specific place. This suggests that location changes can take many patterns, and these patterns have implications for impact. Warehouses are not standalone facilities, but connect supply chains. It locates between the market and freight infrastructure. If population location has changed, we should consider its location change. Even though it looks like there has been this dramatic change in warehousing location, it is possible that the population employment distribution has changed so much that warehouses are not further away from potential market on average than this was previously. So these are all the things we want to think about. So in summary, I generated these four measures as to how this location change might be measured. I think the measure one, we can think about the measure of strict decentralization, which is relative to a specific location, such as the CBD or the geographic center of warehouses. Also, we can think about relative decentralization as in measure two. We can consider the distribution of employment and population. Similarly, in measure three, we can think about a strict measure of concentration of warehouses. I use the Gini coefficient. Or as a metaphor, I can consider the degree to which all employment is concentrated relative to the warehouse. So there have been a few empirical studies. Their limitation is that they haven't used many different measures, but they have not consistently used one. They have not used multiple measures in one study. I used the Nicole Business Pattern data set between 2003 and 2013. It is based on zip code, and it provides a number of warehouses by zip code. The definition is from NAICS code 493, warehousing and storage. I use the four metropolitan areas in California as case study areas, which are Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, and San Diego. I will explain it in detail. The four metropolitan areas are quite diverse and thus provide good cases for testing spatial measures. Los Angeles is the second largest CSA in the U.S. It has roughly more than twice the population and employment as San Francisco. Sacramento and San Diego are much smaller in population and employment. The metropolitan area differs in other ways too. Los Angeles is the nation's number one international trade node. San Francisco is also a major international trade center, but in higher value groups. Sacramento is a trade node for the Central Valley, and San Diego serves as a hub for cross-border trade and industry. These differences should lead to different development density patterns and trade flows. The warehousing industry also differs across metro areas. Los Angeles has the largest warehousing industry, and it is the number one international trade node. San Francisco follows. However, the size difference is greater than the population. Sacramento is the third, followed by San Diego. All but San Diego show a significant industry expansion. The dramatic change in Sacramento is from Apple's new distribution center that I will explain later with a map. So this map shows the distribution of Los Angeles warehouses employment in 2003. The circles are those zip codes that have at least one warehouse, and its size corresponds to the number of warehousing employment. In 2013, you can see the apparent industry expansion in some specific places. Let me show before and after again. This is before 2003 and after 2013. The expansion is concentrated in Inland Empire, and also on the cloud. The addition of new warehouses and warehousing employment in these kinds of places should increase the average return to the market, and thus it implies more strong activity. This map shows the Sacramento warehousing employment with the same scale and the same size classification. It shows the situation in 2003. And in 2013, we captured a large increase in size and depth growth. Apple constructed their new distribution center between 2012 and 13, and added a large number of warehousing jobs. So I showed a very distinctive patterns of warehousing location change with the map. Could the spatial measures capture this disparity? Yes. These are the results for measure one decentralization. It shows the changes between the two periods, 2003 and 13. And I put red highlights if the changes were statistically significant. As you can see here, Los Angeles is the only place where it shows a consistent pattern of decentralization from the CBD and from the geographical center of warehouses. However, if you consider the warehousing employment, all four metro areas show a significant change between the two periods. Measure 2 quantifies the degree of decentralization considering distribution of employment and population. The result is similar to Measure 1. Los Angeles is the only place with a consistent trend of relative decentralization. Warehouses in Los Angeles decentralize more than employment and population have done. Other areas showed varying results. Measure 3 quantifies the degree to which warehouses are concentrated. In Los Angeles and San Diego, we see a consistent pattern of concentration. In Measure 4, I could not conduct a statistical test, but they all changed in the same direction. Namely, they all became more clustered than employment as a whole. So I have done case studies of 4 metropolitan areas. When I use these multiple measures, which is a comprehensive way of measuring this different aspects of spatial organization, there is no consistency across 4 cities. Los Angeles is the only place with strong decentralization and concentration patterns. San Francisco shows some evidence of decentralization, but it is only true for the employment. Sacramento and San Diego show varying results. As we have seen, how you measure is important. A measure definition can change your understanding of the matrix. Accordingly, it is really important to use multiple measures. Warehousing employment allocation is much more flexible than the actual movement of warehouses. I surmise that this might be one of the supply chain operators' objectives of allocating labor intensity or maybe larger scale warehousing operation in different places. But decentralization happened in some places, not in others. It happened when I measured in one way, but not when I measured in another way. The suggestion is that different trends are happening in different places. Why? It is because these metropolitan areas differ from each other. Their land rent is very different from others, not to mention their land availability. Also, as I explained earlier, their role in international trade differs widely. The size of local markets also differs. Their industry composition is different. Transportation environment is different. For example, people in Los Angeles always suffer from congestion and delay. Of course, land use regulation, tax policy, and other local labor pool are all different. And these sectors are really worth further research. And I really look forward to more empirical evidence. So that's it for my presentation. If you have any questions, I'm really happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Sangoon. We're now going to move on to our final presentation given by Quan Yan of the University of Southern California.
And thank you, Nika.
I'll pull up your presentation now, if you just hold on 1 second. There you go.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Quan Yan. I'm from the University of Southern California. My topic of my presentation is location of warehouses and environmental justice. I would like to present you some empirical evidence on the spatial relationship between warehousing location and the communities near the warehouses. Here's an overview of my presentation. The topic originates from discussion on environmental justice and transportation facilities. As we know, certain types of transport facilities such as airports, rail yards, and high-volume freeways can bring about substantial environmental impacts, and they are regarded as locally undesirable. We have seen some evidence showing the co-location of these facilities and the disadvantaged population. In the world of freight, warehouses are major truck terminals and attractors. Truck movement around warehouses generates environmental externalities, including air pollution, noises, and etc. The rapid growth of freight demand and warehousing industry provides an incentive to examine environmental justice issues from the perspective of warehousing location. From the newspaper and the internet, we read about truck-related traffic congestion, accidents, and air pollution in our neighborhood. Such problems are particularly severe in large metropolitan areas with strong freight demand. Therefore, the first question I would like to ask is, are warehouses locally undesirable? According to existing studies and data, trucks are a major emitter of toxic particulate matters and nitrogen oxides in California. They generate high level of noises and primarily contribute to pavement damage. Based on our case study in the city of Compton, residents living near a warehouse cluster complain regularly about the high volume of truck traffic and associated noises. When we map the locations of warehouses and the diesel PM emissions, we can find clear spatial relationship between them. The blue dots are warehouse locations. The red hotspots are where diesel PM level is high, and they appear to be the areas where warehouses are clustered. Then, the second question is, are warehouses disproportionately located in disadvantaged neighborhoods? Traditional environmental justice studies focus on minority and poor population. From the literature, three major factors that lead to environmental injustice are identified, including economic, social, political, and racial. To be specific, low land rent and ineffective political power of local population attract the siting of locally undesirable land uses. The following decrease in land values due to environmental externalities further affect the housing dynamics and attract the inflow of disadvantaged population. Therefore, we finally see the co-location of locally undesirable land uses and disadvantaged population groups. Young's case study in the city of Rialto and the county of San Bernardino, people living on one side of the jurisdictional boundary are not able to effectively exert their political power over the siting of a huge warehouse on the other side. Lack of zoning coordination can lead to environmental injustice as well. On top of question two, I would like to ask, among the neighborhoods with warehouses, does disadvantaged neighborhoods have higher warehousing activity intensity? Warehousing activity intensity is associated with truck footprint, and disadvantaged neighborhoods may be more subject to high concentration of warehousing activity. I developed the model to examine the relationship between warehouse location and population characteristics. I also control for other factors that are related to warehousing location. Here are my dependent variables. I use binary, discrete, and as well as continuous dependent variables to measure warehousing location. This is the list of my independent variables. Population characteristics include minority ratio and the median household income. Control variables include transport access, zoning, and economic attributes. All of these variables are theoretically associated with warehousing location. My study area is Los Angeles region, which is the second largest metropolitan area and the biggest trade node in the United States. It has a long history of warehousing industry development and a relatively comprehensive database for the analysis. My observations would be 3,709 traffic analysis zones or TARs. What is changing here for me? I find strong linear relationship between household income and the minority ratio in this region. In order to disentangle their impact on warehousing location, I divide the TARs into categories with different minority dominance and household income levels. I treat the medium or low income white group as the references. I try to figure out whether other four groups would have higher probability of containing warehouses than the reference group. Here are some simple statistics that can help us understand the data. Out of the 3,709 TARs, about 3,000 are without any warehouses, and 134 with at least 10 warehouses. Where we measure distance with from each pod to the nearest freight-related facilities, we see those pods with warehouses have shorter distances to all the four types of facilities on average. Those pods with warehouses also have higher population shares of Latino and Black people, lower median housing income, and lower median housing values. These statistics seem to show that race and economic status are both associated with warehousing locations. However, as I mentioned earlier, the two factors are intertwined with each other, spatially, and we need stronger statistical tools to separate them. Here is a map showing the locations of warehouses and different types of neighborhoods. Blue dots are warehouses again. Green areas are minority dominant, and orange areas are white dominant. You can find a strong spatial relationship between minority dominance and warehousing locations. Meanwhile, in the areas surrounded by red circles, where low-income minority people are concentrated, there are nonetheless very few warehouses. It is not, however, not consistent with traditional environmental justice prediction. Let's further take a look at some regression results and see whether they can provide us some evidence on the minority income puzzle. The first model is on the probability of containing at least one warehouse in a certain time. We can see out of the four types of neighborhoods, only medium-income minority neighborhoods have higher probability of containing warehouses compared to medium-income white neighborhoods, the reference group. We can also find the coefficients for the control variables have expected signs and significance. When we use the number of warehouses as the dependent variable in the second model, the regression results are very similar. And again, only the medium-income minority variable stands out as a significant factor in estimating the number of warehouses in a neighborhood. When we estimate the warehousing activity intensity, both high-income minority and medium-income minority have positive and significant coefficients. This means, compared to the reference group, these two groups of neighborhoods have higher warehousing activity. Putting all these results together, here is some discussion. First, given the spatial overlap of minority ratio and household income, I disentangle the two factors using dummy variables and regression models. In most cases, only medium-income minority neighborhoods have higher probability of containing warehouses, while low-income minority neighborhoods never show such tendency. These findings differ from traditional environmental justice literature. One explanation is that in Los Angeles region, poor neighborhoods are concentrated in certain locations, either dense central Los Angeles area or the peripheries of the region, where warehouses are not present. Meanwhile, zoning requirements and the availability of land development can be part of the story too. Second, I use different regression models to estimate the number of warehouses, and no matter how I specify the models, the results are similar and robust. In the environment justice studies, using discrete variables is not common. This reminds me that compared to traditional locally undesirable land uses, such as landfills and toxic facilities, warehouses are much more widely distributed, and the scale of their environmental impact could be even greater. Finally, among the factors that are associated with warehousing location, population characteristics are not trivial at all. We can see this by comparing the data coefficients of different factors. Therefore, we should not ignore population characteristics when we examine the environmental impact of warehousing location in the future. To sum up, the bottom line of my research is warehouses are disproportionately located in minority-dominant neighborhoods, but the relationship between their locations and the household income is not clear so far. In other words, environmental justice environmental injustice exists in warehousing locations, but not in a traditional way. In the near future, I would like to further expand the scope of my studies. Admittedly, Los Angeles is unique in terms of the demographics, and I will need to include more metropolitan areas to attest my findings. Also, I will need to check the historical choices of warehousing locations and provide more evidence on the mechanism behind the spatial pattern. This is the end of my presentation. Thank you. Look forward to comments and suggestions.
Thank you, Kwan.